2004 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 315, Satanic Symbol on the Nauvoo Temple, a paper presented by Alex Caldero with a response by Alan Roberts.
Those are the two critical things. I welcome and introduce our speaker, Alex Caldero, who is a poet and writer, and as a result of his long lifetime interest in symbolism, is going to present some things relative to the Nauvoo Temple. The respondent is Alan Roberts, who's a architect from Salt Lake City, former co-editor of Sunstone and Dialogue, and author of Where Are the All-Seeing Eyes? The Rise and Decline of Early Mormon Symbolism. With that, I'll turn the time to Alex, and we will sit back and enjoy, and when he is completed, then Alan will respond, and given the time, we will then have questions and responses. Thank you, Alex.
You took my... I have a terrible memory, you know. I mean, not that I couldn't improvise.
We know that.
I was wondering if we could lower these lights a little bit, just a teeny bit. Perfect. Thank you for coming. The satanic symbol on the Nauvoo Temple. The recently completed temple in the city of Nauvoo is as beautiful as the name of that city. The original temple was built in 1840, in the 1840s, and dedicated on April 30th, 1846. This dedication was held just before the saints left Nauvoo, after the brutal death of the prophet Joseph Smith in Carthage jail. Soon after, the temple was destroyed by fire and then completely damaged by a tornado. Restoration work began on October 24th, 1999, and the completed building was dedicated on June 27th, 2002. Over the years, anti-Mormons have had a field day pointing out the inverted pentacles on the Salt Lake Temple and their satanic significance. And now, there they are again on the newly restored Nauvoo Temple, capstones and stained glass windows all marked with these curious figures, these inverted pentacles or pentagrams. Information regarding the pentagram, especially in its inverted form, has not been forthcoming from the LDS Church. Not even the Nauvoo Temple Project Administrator knew the meaning of the inverted pentacles on these temples. He said I should talk to one of the general authorities. Which one? I asked. Again, he didn't know. An unofficial interpretation offered by some is that the pentacles have an astrological significance, possibly related to the planet Venus, the morning star. Furthermore, some missionaries in Nauvoo, perhaps under the direction of their mission president, have told inquiring folk that the inverted pentacles represent the Star of Bethlehem. But what has any of this to do with Mormonism? And why are these pentacles inverted? Among ancient symbols, the inverted pentacle is unanimously thought of as the symbol par excellence for the devil, also known as the Star of Mendez or Baphomet. The inverted pentacle resembles the head of a goat, the horned god, devil, of the witch cults, not to be confused with the nature worship of the Wiccans. What's more, the inverted pentacle is the official seal and logo of the American-based Church of Satan. Pardon the infernal reference, but what the hell is the symbol of Satan doing on two major LDS temples? Could the anti-Mormons be right? Is it indicative of the satanic rites that they suppose go on inside? Why is this demonic symbol allowed to adorn the temples when not even the cross would be an acceptable symbol to display on these sacred edifices? I've been more than a little frustrated and not receiving an adequate response to these questions. In life, especially in religious and scientific matters, there is no end to mysteries, real mysteries. So it disturbs me when people create artificial mysteries, either out of ignorance or to cover up something from the past or whatever. The inverted pentacles on the Nauvoo Temple, as well as those on the Salt Lake Temple, are a perfect example of an artificial mystery. Therefore, I want to venture a response in the hope of appeasing not only myself, but anyone else who may be wondering about the subject. Before I begin, however, I'd like to say a word regarding a key concept in my approach to symbols in general and to the pentacle in particular. It is important to bear in mind that there is a language of symbols, and that, as in any language, the meaning of any single element depends on the context, that is, on what is next to it and generally around and interacting with that element. The language of symbols has a long and venerable history in both the East and the West. It is this language that allows architectural structures to function as books. This is especially evident in Gothic cathedrals. With this in mind, let me present certain basic symbols and interpret them in association with the overall temple structure. The temple structure, in our tradition, Hellenic, Hebraic, Christian, geometrical symbolism can be traced back to Plato and his transmission of Pythagorean and Egyptian doctrine. On the authority of Plato, many have used this symbolism to analyze and discuss the nature of reality. These include medieval and Renaissance philosophers such as Robert Flood, Cornelius Agrippa, Marsilio Ficino, and Giordano Bruno. Plato identified the square, and by extension the cube, with earth or matter, the dark, passive stuff. He identified the triangle, and by extension the pyramid, with fire, the active living principle. Out of these two elements, the demiurge, God the maker, the fashioner, produced the universe. Needless to say, this is a highly abbreviated account of a very involved process and ideology. For details, see Plato's Timaeus and its Neoplatonic commentaries. It's no coincidence that a triangle placed on top of a square results in what looks like a child's drawing of a house. The triangle and square are fundamental structures representative of the lower realm of earth and upper realm of fire. They are the literal building blocks of reality. As such, the house is a model of the temple, and in turn, the temple is a small-scale model of the universe. Our word, temple, comes from the Latin templum, meaning space consecrated or cut off or set apart. In Hebrew, Bethel, it means the house of the Lord. The pentacle, or pentagram, penta five, cube thing, is a five-pointed figure. Its primary numeric and visual allusion is to the five main limbs of the human body and to the human being as a whole. It signifies the human as the measure of all things. Just as the temple is a model of the universe, macrocosm or big world, so the pentacle is a model of the human being, microcosm or little world. Usage of the pentacle in Kabbalah and other esoteric literatures constantly points back to this root meaning. The human being is a little world, a sort of mini-me of God. The pentacle in Mormon context. In the context of the Nauvoo and Salt Lake temples, the above symbologies tell a very specific and essential story. They are a grand summation of the veritable doctrines and ritual practices that are housed within the walls of these temples. Though some Latter-day Saints, perhaps out of insecurity or ignorance, would becloud open communication of these matters, I want to share this so-called secret, sacred information openly, without breaking any oaths, of course. As a matter of fact, it is because of its sacred and essential nature that it's vital to speak and be mindful of these things, lest our religious activities degenerate into soulless actions. First observation. Whenever a pentacle appears on the square or cube portion, main body, of the temple, it points downward. This is a view of the towers and main body of the temple. Getting closer to the view of the main body of the temple and keystones with inverted pentacles above arched windows. Also shown are sun, moon, and earth stones. A close-up view of the keystones with inverted pentacles on arched windows in the main body of the temple. Above is a view of the towers with the main body of the temple in between. Below is a close-up view of arched doorway between the towers with keystone displaying the inverted pentacle. View of the tower and main body of the temple from the front. Above the columns, over the sunstones, there are capstones and stained glass windows with inverted pentacles. Side view of the main body of the temple showing capstones and stained glass windows with inverted pentacles. The inverted pentacle on the main body, cube portion of these temples represent a downward descending movement. In the context of Roman doctrine and scripture, this downward movement has reference to the fall of Adam and Lucifer. These two beings are the principal personages in an archetypal drama reenacted in temple worship. As such, they play out symbolic and allegorical roles that speak of two major falls, the fall of Lucifer and the fall of Adam. Quote, "The fifth angel blew his trumpet, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key to the bottomless pit." Revelation 9:1. Quote, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning?" Isaiah 14:12. As son of the morning may be a why some people think that this has to do with Venus, the morning star, somehow that kind of got mixed in there. "And it must needs," quote, "and it must needs be that the devil should tempt the children of men, or they could not be agents unto themselves, for if they never should have bitter, they could not know the sweet. Adam fell that men might be." 2 Nephi 2:25. Second observation. Whenever a pentacle appears on the triangle or pyramidal portion, the tower of the temple, it points upward. This is a Salt Lake Temple keystone with upward pentacle. This is a view of the towers or the pyramid portions showing arched windows and keystones with upward pentacles. And they're a little, not totally as visible as I would have wanted them. Various views of towers or pyramidal portions with arched windows and keystones with upward pentacles. Nauvoo Temple, view of tower or pyramidal portion. Beneath the clock and running round the tower, there is a row of keystones with upward pentacles. Over the arched windows above the clock, there is another row of keystones with upward pentacles. A close-up view of tower and rows of keystones and with upward pentacles. The upward pentacle represents a rising upward movement with reference to the redemption of Adam and the resurrection of Christ. Quote, "The Lord your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are this day as the stars of heaven for multitude." Deuteronomy 1:10. Quote, "And I saw the stars, that they were very great, and that one of them was nearest unto the throne of God, and there were many great ones which were near unto it." Doctrine and Covenant 88:9. "And thus I, the Lord God, appoint unto man the days of his probation, that by his natural death he might be raised in immortality unto eternal life." Abraham 3:2. Doctrine and Covenant 132, 30, 29, 42 through 44. The pentacle speaks. The upward and inverted pentacles or stars, as they appear and interact with the other symbols and with the general temple structure, recapitulate and tell the story of the atonement, the at-one-ment of the human and the divine, the reconciliation of the little world and the big world. Both kinds of pentacles are positioned on the temple structure so as to display a continuous downward-upward flow, down the main body, up the towers. Thus, in one eternal round, they indicate the fall and redemption, the wheel of the law spinning forth all phenomenon, the endless fall spring of life. Down and up. The square portion, Q portion, pentacles pointing down through the different realms, up the towers, pentacles pointing up. This is a side view, both tower and main body of the temple, and they are arched windows and keystones with upturned and inverted pentacles respectively. Therefore, in the context of Mormon temple architecture, the inverted pentacle does not represent the devil as such, but rather Lucifer, bringer of light, as a key figure in a perennial cosmic drama. This drama involves both Lucifer and Christ and can be summarized as light falling from the light into darkness, fall of Lucifer, and then rising out of that darkness back to the light, Christ resurrected. Furthermore, as a participant in this drama, Lucifer is closer to God than we may want to think or believe. After all, was he not sitting next to the Lord himself deciding the fate of unsuspecting Job? Job 1, 6 through 12. Certain uninformed or ill-informed persons have confused the appearance of inverted pentacles on LDS temples with devil worship. I do hope that the suggestions I've offered indicate something more interesting and of value. They may serve to clarify certain passages of Scripture and Mormon doctrine. Both of the original temple architects, Truman O. Angel, Salt Lake, and William Weeks, Nauvoo, as well as the presiding prophets, gave their full approval to using these symbols. These symbols continue to stand in both the Salt Lake and the restored Nauvoo temples, in spite of accusations of satanic practices. These symbols, alongside the rest of the symbolism in and outside these temples, are essential parts of the teachings of the restored gospel. Another symbol worth looking at, by way of an addendum. Another dramatic recapitulation of the doctrine of the fall, redemption, and at-one-ment in terms of the upward-downward flow as described above can be found within the Nauvoo Temple itself. The spiral staircase. By its very nature, the spiral creates a continuous movement of coexistent and non-dualistic realities. The stairs going down indicate movement into darkness, into the underworld of earth life, the material realm. Nauvoo Temple, spiral staircase looking downward. Spiral staircase looking upward. The stairs going up indicate movement into light, into the divine fire, the spiritual realm. Thus, we see again that both the Salt Lake and Nauvoo temples are replete with symbols indeed with an entire language of symbols, all of which point to and teach the ancient doctrine of transformation and at-one-ment of the human and the divine, the dark and the light, the temporal and the eternal. And what is the grand aim of all this? It is the birth of individuals who are whole and therefore truly holy. In closing, let me say this. When I seek outside, God makes me bad. Only within is salvation to be had, Angelus Silesius. The shadow belongs to the light, Dr. Jung. Ergo, that's it. I, next to T, T, a grown-up I, a fully developed me. Thank you.
Good morning. Mr. Calgero speaks of the artificial mystery presented by the notion that there may be satanic symbols on the temple, and presents his attempt to reconcile or solve this mystery. I'd like to begin by focusing on one sentence in the beginning of the paper. It says, the inverted pentangle is unanimously thought of as a symbol par excellence for the devil. I think that part of the difficulty of the artificial mystery is that the pentangle is not, in fact, universally understood to be a symbol of the devil. It is a symbol that is used by many people in many ways over many periods of time. And I think that he is correct in stating that we need to understand the context with which any symbol is presented, or in which any symbol is presented. And to understand also how Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, and other Mormons used symbolism in architecture and other graphic presentations. I'm wondering how many of you saw the beginning part of the Olympic opening ceremonies last night. It was quite an astonishing presentation of early Greek gods, mythology, history, and symbolism. Pythagoras, and there were geometric symbols. There were all kinds of symbols presented in the air. It was a rather fantastic presentation. The ancients did, in fact, begin as soon as they understood how to present things graphically to create symbols, images, figures in writing. And each time this was done, they conveyed or imparted a meaning to these symbols. Then each succeeding group, the Romans after the Greeks, Christians taking from the Romans, the Freemasons taking from the Christians and adding in some Egyptian and some other symbology, Joseph Smith then taking from Freemasonry and reinvesting those symbols with new Mormon meanings. So over time, symbols, the graphic images stay the same, but they take on new meanings. I wrote an article about 25 years ago called Where Are the All-Seeing Eyes? The Rise and Decline of Early Mormon Symbolism. Sunstone, the carrier, the vehicle for this article. And I present the case that without exception, all of the Mormon symbols that appear on the early temples, as well as in other
graphic presentations on paper, on cut glassware, on ZCMI crates of merchandise, that virtually all of those symbols had their origin in Freemasonry, and that there are really no exceptions. Not only that, the possibility of taking symbols from Mormon literature, for example, the Book of Mormon, and using those symbols in the early period was not realized. Why are there no Liahonas, for example? I think that's a wonderful idea. It presents itself a wonderful graphic opportunity. But instead of finding Liahonas in early Mormon symbology on temples, for example, there are no Liahonas or any other objects taken from Mormon created literature. It all has its origin in Freemasonry. In fact, the pentangle or pentacle, and when Alex calls it a pentagram, that's actually a misdefinition. A pentagram is a five-sided figure. A pentagram is not a pentangle or a pentacle. But a pentacle without a goat's head, and again, context is important. You didn't see any of the pentacles on the temples having goat's heads. If they had goat's heads with angry eyes and ominous curvy horns, I would be worried. But they, in fact, had the opposite meaning. I looked up in one of my old Freemasonry encyclopedias, which was published in 1884, about the time that these symbols were going on the Salt Lake Temple, some of these words and definitions. Star. A star in hieroglyphical language always denoted a god. One example is the star that led the wise men to find Jesus. Stars are also employed principally as symbols of great intellectuality, and this symbol has been perpetrated from the most remote antiquity. The decoration of most spiritual and temporal orders consists of a star. So now we're talking about stars generally. Then this Masonic encyclopedia goes on to say the following. Five-pointed downward-pointing stars are called pentangles, or the seal of Solomon and the shield of David, and were employed all over as a preservative against witchcraft, in which superstition the Jews are said to have participated, for they used written charms enclosed in the above hexagonal or pentangular figure, and there's an image of one, and disposed cabalistically, which were worn about their necks. It constituted the Pythagorean Petalpha, which was a symbol of health. In other words, in the Masonic literature of the time during which the symbols on the temple were produced, the idea of pentangle in Masonic symbology, which I maintain was the model for Mormon symbology, the idea of a pentangle was not satanic at all, but just the opposite. It represented God and other very positive messages. Alex talks about the Church of Satan, and I'd like to know, this paper has no footnotes, so I would be very interested in knowing when this church was created, when they appropriated the pentangle with the goat as their logo, and if this church, in fact, was created after 1830, why we would think that it would have been of any influence on early Mormons. It's a mystery that I think is not so much a mystery. Brigham Young and Truman Angel were the ones who created the symbology on the Salt Lake Temple, and they borrowed from ideas that had appeared previously in Nauvoo, as we know. After Brigham Young died, architect Truman Angel lived another 10 years. During that time, he had disagreements, arguments with the church leaders who were then given the responsibility of creating the temple or finishing it. Among these were John Taylor, the president, and Franklin D. Richards. And I've looked at some of their letters, and the debate basically was whether the building went up and the stonework was put in place and the carvings were included in that stonework and the exterior walls, whether the Masonic orders should be followed strictly or whether they could be simplified and reduced. Some wanted the Masonic orders to be maintained, and Truman Angel, for one, felt that they should be simplified and that at this point it shouldn't matter whether they are Masonically accurate. The symbology eventually was simplified. If you have ever had an opportunity to look at the original drawings of the temple drawn by Angel, you will see that what exists now on the temple is significantly simpler. It still is cosmological. You have Ursa Major, the Big Dipper, and you have sun, moon, and stars, and so forth. But there were even other elements that were left off, Saturn, for example. Again, the cosmology of the Masons, the Freemasons, was the immediate model for the symbology on the temples. I would maintain that no one group can rightfully claim to exclusively own the meaning of any symbol, any more than any one religious group can exclusively claim to own the definition of Christian. It always bothers me when Baptists or Catholics or Mormons or anyone claim that we own the definition of Christian. And if your church doesn't match my definition, you're not Christian. The same thing is true with symbols. No one owns them. They are free and available to everyone. Alex, on page 9 of his paper, also introduces the idea that the pentacle has a positive God-centered meaning. He then creates his own explanation or justification today for really trying to explain what was done in the 1840s and 50s. His speculation, as I would call it, using scripture, is probably as good as anyone else's. It effectively, however, is a sort of rewriting of history. That is to say, how can we as 21st century people know the minds of 19th century people and accurately attempt to provide an explanation for what only they understood at the time? We have very little to, very little was left for us today to explain why these symbols were put into place and what each of them meant. There are many books like House of the Lord, Temples of the Most High, and all of these other Mormon apologetic books describing the temples and their architecture and their symbolism. Each one attempts to do what Alex has done today, give an explanation generally based on scripture as to what these various symbols mean, and of course no one quite has the same explanation. I'm not really critical of this because essentially Alex is doing what others have done before him, reinventing and reinterpreting old symbols, giving them new meanings to suit our current purposes. I doubt that his explanation has any resemblance to what Joseph Smith and Brigham Young have in mind, but it doesn't matter. His explanation satisfies his need to resolve this artificial mystery and reconcile conflicting information and really to present a positive spin. Joseph Smith did no less in his reliance on Masonic information. In fact, it goes beyond that. Joseph Smith really had a predilection for symbols, and I think other examples would include the Book of Abraham figures. He really misunderstood and misinterpreted those, but he was fascinated by them and tried to give an explanation, which turns out now to be not accurate. He did the same with the Kinderhook plates. These were forgeries bell-shaped plates, 8 of them held together with a ring made by a couple of blacksmiths who were trying to expose Joseph Smith as a fraud. And so they took various cattle brands and other things and made them into an ancient hieroglyphic language. And he translated them. And in fact, there was no ancient language. But he had a fascination for glyphics, graphics, symbols, and trying to give them new meanings. So I guess I think that we all in our own way do what Alex has done and look at our culture and look at symbols and meanings and try to define them, reinterpret them, reinvent them, reinvest them with meanings that are significant to us. I think in Alex's case in particular, he being a poet, we should give him all the poetic license that he would like to have, and we should all feel free to do the same. So my comments are pretty brief and pretty straight to the point, pretty basic. I think we have time left over for some Q&A, and we have a much bigger crowd than I think either of us expected, which is great, especially early this morning. So feel free to pose your questions to either of us.
First of all, I would like to thank both Alan and Alex for attempting to open our eyes to what's behind the symbology that we live with every day. Part of it is Mormon, but we have personal symbols. And my question to both of them is to pose the problem of whether symbols indeed have real power or only the power that we individually give them. That is there some intrinsic power in a star, a cube, a triangle, or whatever symbol, or is it all the meaning that those associated with a symbol may give it? This is also a larger question because it has to ritual and symbolism are very closely related. If we participate in rituals and we are unbelievers, does the ritual have power?
Oh, I think there's no problem with that. Every symbol has got at least two layers to it. One is the symbol itself, and the other is some of the conventional sort of layers that have been heaped upon it over time. The symbol in its own right has a power in its own right, okay, I believe. And but there's aspects to it that are very subjective. And those usually have to do with those layers that have accumulated over it over a period of of years and through various usages. But yes, I do believe that in and of itself the pentacle has got intrinsic properties. But to access them, you have to kind of go through and sort of go down into its very heart, and not get caught up with the conventional meanings. I believe that about every word we speak, by the way. There is a conventional meaning to every word that we speak that has a definite subjective meaning, and then every word that I speak has an intrinsic power. That's my response to that.
And I, as a rationalist, believe the opposite. I believe a symbol in and of itself has absolutely no power, only the power with which we invest it. If I were to invent a new word right now, let's say clerk, K-L-O-R-K, that word has no meaning in and of itself. I just came up with it. Now I can give it a definition, and as soon as I do that, then that word takes on meaning. It takes on meaning because I invested it with meaning, but it had no meaning initially. I am thinking about creating a coat of arms for my family, you know, the Roberts. Actually, there are some I can send away and get one, but it has lions on it and stuff. It has no meaning for me anymore. But I've thought of designing a new one, and it has various symbols on it that would represent different aspects of my background, my family's background, ethnicity, our professions, things like that. And when I do that, I will be borrowing symbols and interpreting them and investing them with the outside is very accurately done, except for one element, which is the Moroni on the top, an angel Moroni with a trumpet. The original temple had a horizontal angel, and it had a spear with a flame, and it had an interlocking compass and square like that. There is no reference in the Bible to interlocking compasses and square. It is purely a Masonic symbol. Brigham Young had a compass and square Masonic lapel pin on him when many of the photos were taken of him. And, of course, in reconstructing the temple, people decided to replace the Masonic angel with the Book of Mormon angel. And so a trumpet by itself means nothing. Even an interlocking compass and square mean nothing until you invest them with meaning, I believe, anyway.
I'm sorry I came in late, so I don't know if you discussed this, but I would like to know if you, in any of the artwork or in the temple at all, if any of the symbols that you have talked about or seen represent the male and the female.
No, I didn't discuss that. The main gist of what I discussed had to do with one particular characteristic, the occurrence of downward-pointing pentacles and upward-pointing pentacles, which I don't think has really been discussed. Why up, why down in that conjunction? That's really the heart of it. Well, I could go into it. For instance, there was the triangle and the square. The square is definitely the female, and the triangle is the male. I mean, if I want to go into it in that way. But that was not the focus of what I was doing. It's definitely there, okay? Oh, yeah.
I'm not aware of any overt attempt to represent symbolically the genders. I noticed that goat, though, on that pentangle looked awfully male to me, and there seems to be no confusion about who Satan is, whether it's a male or... So you're safe there, sister.
I was wondering if the symbols don't come sometimes from dreams, because Jung analyzed the dreams that came from his patients, like the mandala.
I think that I wouldn't disagree with you at all. But that wasn't the question. I wish you would have. It's a good statement, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That would be some origin of symbols.
Well, I think everyone has tried to figure out where Joseph Smith got his ideas, which were incredibly fertile. There's a three-volume history of Joseph Smith being written right now by Scott Kinney, Marty Bradley, and Richard Van Wagner. And this will be the largest single set of writings discussing Joseph Smith, his mind, his life, his works. And if I were to guess, my best guess is to where he got the ideas for symbolism. I've already talked about Freemasonry. He was an avid reader, and he frequented the libraries of the towns where he lived and other libraries, and he collected books, and he had his own library, and we have a list of the things in his library. I think it would be a fun project for someone, maybe somebody here in the audience, to look at all of the books that were owned by him in his library and analyze them and look for precedents and influences. This was done in the Christian Science tradition. I think someone, was it Mary Baker Eddy? Some scholars also, her library is actually still intact, and some people went into her library and found this was a great shock to the Christian Science community, and many people left as a result of this. They found that rather than getting direct inspiration for her writings, that the ideas, sometimes direct quotations, paragraphs, sentences were lifted directly from things in her library. In my article, I called Joseph Smith an eclectic synthesist. He was brilliant at drawing from his environment ideas and threads, disparate threads, and then weaving them into new cloth. There's parts of Arminian religion, there's anti-Masonry and then Masonry. There are all these other influences that he was exposed to. And he gathered them in, he rethought them through, he connected them in new ways, and created a new religious tradition that has very familiar aspects to it. So dreams, I don't know. Yeah, so I certainly wouldn't preclude that, because I think he was capable of gathering insights in many ways.
This afternoon I'm actually giving a paper on Mormon witches. And what I found in talking to this group of women who are not connected in any other way than that I searched them out on the internet, that a couple of them really have found a congruence with Mormonism and Wicca, because and they use the pentacles on the temple as this. See, I told you. And I wonder, you did mention a distinction between the pentacle. I can't remember exactly. I'm sleep deprived. But what you said, but if you could kind of revisit that for a minute and make the distinction again.
I was very careful to draw a distinction between how it's used by satanic groups, including the Church of Satan, which, by the way, is a late 20th century organization, LaVey, the Satanic Bible, all this, appropriation of an old symbol. Okay, and I do make a big distinction between that and the witches and the Wiccans. All right, which is used as a fertility symbol and part of an entire different context. All right, one thing is that answer your one thing that I needed really to comment upon, something that you said, at the risk of being out of order, is that you cannot dismiss the simply saying that it's poetic license. Okay, very, very important. Knowledge obtained through poetic means and through the poetic genius is an alternate form and complementary in many ways to the scientific and more scholarly, what I consider two-dimensional approach to knowledge. You know, so I sensed a bit of dismissing everything that I had said, because after all, it's only poetic license, and he is a poet, and poets are not really connected with anything that can possibly be scholarly or true in any sense. And so I really felt that I needed to respond to that, you know, because I have Joseph Smith himself, and his procedures were very poetic, William Blake. I have a slew of folks that maintain that, you know, we have ultimate forms of achieving knowledge, including dreams.
Actually, I agree with that. I love poetry myself, and I do believe that poetry is one of the vehicles to attain truth with a small t, okay? I think the ultimate truth with the big T is elusive to every method of exploration. I think what I was really trying to say was not to dismiss you or your method or your conclusions, but to say that it falls into this category of speculative theology, which I think is fine. That's how all theology came into existence. It started out as somebody's set of ideas. One man's truth is another man's heresy, and vice versa. So I think you were giving your best explanation, and I think that's a totally legitimate exercise, and I don't dismiss it in any way. I think what I'm also trying to say is it's a good explanation today for what we see there and don't understand, and now we're trying to understand and make it make sense, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's how they understood it early on, and I think pretty much everybody gets that too.
I think you were first in following.
Alan, I wanted to ask you, I didn't hear you address the difference, though, between you said the stars represented God, but I didn't hear you address the difference between the ones pointing up and pointing down, and the significance of that, because I actually found his explanation to make sense and be satisfying. And my second question is, there doesn't seem to be any official church explanation for these symbols, and I think it's ironic that we have to come to Sunstone meeting to learn about the symbols on our temples, and I wondered how far you have gone to try to receive or research official church explanations for these symbols, either one of you.
Well, it's like Alex said, which general authority do you ask to get the official word? No one, because there is no there are no official explanations. There aren't any unofficial explanations. There aren't any semi-authoritative things. That's why it's left to people like us and yourselves to try to figure it out. I quoted two quotes from the Masonic Encyclopedia. One had to do with pentangles, the downward pointing star, and the other one had to do with the five-pointed upward pointing star, and they both actually have, they're both references to divinity, health, knowledge, and other things. They both have very positive meanings for Freemasons anyway, and neither one of them had any negative meanings at all, at least in this particular very lengthy 19th century document. So
I think that one of the things that I really wanted to point out is the fact that both of these are very positive, okay? The dark belongs to the light, all right? And as far as the official explanations, I think that it's a problem of language. Officials, by definition, have a problem addressing the real issues. There's a problem with speaking about polygamy officially today. There's a problem with speaking about child abuse officially today. There's a problem with speaking about Adam God officially today. God the Mother. There's a whole problem with speaking about. You know, it's a language problem that the officials are experiencing. And this is just another one of the things, you know, multiple gods, for instance, that we are polytheistic, you know, that becomes very difficult officially to speak about. You know, so it's an official problem. You know, and officially.
Yeah, it's an official problem unofficially. On the Salt Lake Assembly Hall on Temple Square, in the gables, there are some round windows that have six-pointed stars, stars of David. And when they did the temple or the assembly hall renovation 20 some years ago, they decided to take some gold leaf and create little leaves and things and put them in the voids between the two inverted triangles, and basically hide them. They didn't totally cover them up or remove them. They just put so much ornament in them that they don't call attention to themselves anymore. And I remember asking a tour guide in Temple Square why those windows had Stars of David in them, and they basically said, "We don't know, and we can't. I can't tell you." And they didn't have an answer. I think certainly Mormons have strong connections to the idea of being of the House of Israel, but they didn't want those Stars of David to be offensive to the Saudi Arabian potential converts, you know. So I think it was for sort of political reasons, if nothing else, that they covered these things up. So again, symbols will change their meanings as we change our need to have different ways to represent the significant aspects of our ideology. So
Paul has tried to get up about 5 times. Do you want to?
I
want to hold the floor for you just so you can do it. And then we'll close out this session.
Thank you.
Well, I'm so attracted to Alex's leading us down into the dark and up into the light again through his examination of the material that I want to think about. So we got the symbols from the Freemasons to begin with. What did Joseph Smith have in mind? Obviously, we don't know. What this led me to think about was, you know, are there certain symbols that perhaps the divine wanted represented? And obviously, we don't know the mind of the divine any more than the mind of Joseph Smith. But I like the idea that knowledge may come in this way, that people re-examine the symbols of their culture and they find new meaning, and perhaps that's what we're supposed to do. And so I like Alex's explanation, and I vote for it.
Please join me in thanking both Alex and Alan for their participation.
Well, I think back then they were very immersed in the idea of the gathering of Israel, and that represented the connection. Well, the Star of David shows up in the early New Testament, not with all the Jewish stuff.
Well, they sent them to the widows to be redone. Whoever you did the stuff, it would be nice to get sold.
I think it was intentional that they wanted to experience the gold or otherwise. I don't think if you have a circle or a triangle or square or anything else, I don't think that intrinsically has less power. I don't know what he did. I think he borrowed an ornamental vocabulary, symbolic vocabulary. He got the elements, and then he invested them in his own meanings. And so I don't know that he did, but I can't say.